Hey, this is comedian Mark Maron, and I love Mr. Media Radio, even though he didn't let me go on as long as some other guests.
The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to comedy writer Rob Kuttner. You may not know his name, although this is his third appearance on Mr. Media, and what else does a person need to get famous these days? But you've probably enjoyed his work on everything from The Dennis Miller Show and The Daily Show with Jon Stewart to The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien. He's currently on O'Brien's TBS late-night show, Conan. Kuttner is also the author of two humor books, The Future According to Me and Apocalypse How. His latest side project is a futuristic musical, 2776, featuring all-star contributions by everyone from Ashanti and Andy Richter to Ira Glass and Kobe Smulders. Stick around. There is profound silliness, social commentary, and live musical performances ahead. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you by Amazon.com, Audible.com, and 1-800-DIAL-DJs. Please stop by the website, MrMedia.com, click on our advertisers, support the show. And remember, there's more than 1,000 interviews available at MrMedia.com. We've been doing this since February 2007. Hope you'll find something you like. And thanks for listening. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of people who are willing to laugh at anything for a good cause in the new-to-media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. America is 1,000 years old, and an evil alien, played by Martha Plimpton, of course, threatens to destroy the country unless the president, played by Will Forte, and his Secret Service agent, Aubrey Plaza, can deter her. Okay, just play along with me, okay, folks? The future, it seems, looks like a permanent Comic-Con. Oh, and 2776 is a musical that plays out over 28 songs and a series of music videos. Sort of like the bicentennial Broadway musical, 1776, but in an earthy street language and rap style that the founding fathers couldn't begin to decipher. Created by the Levinsons, the Levinson brothers, I should say, Joel and Stephen, with Rob Kuttner, this craziness features performances by more than 80 singers, comedians, and actors, including Patton Oswalt, Ellie Kemper, Amy Mann, Paul F. Tompkins, Triumph, the insult comic dog, and many more. It comes on a CD or a digital download being sold to benefit One Kid, One World, a foundation for education in impoverished communities throughout Kenya and El Salvador that gives children from primary through secondary school the opportunity for a better and brighter future. Now, joining me to explain all this, hopefully better than I did, is Rob Kuttner, longtime comedy writer for Conan O'Brien on both his TBS show, Conan, and The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien before that. Kuttner has also been a staff writer for The Dennis Miller Show and The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. This is his third Mr. Media appearance. He's obviously a very patient, kind man. Now, we'll also be joined a little later by brothers Joel and Stephen Levinson performing two songs from 2776, Escape from New York and I Want to Take a Nap. Rob Kuttner, welcome back to Mr. Media.
Great to be back here. Right time.
I appreciate that. I'm glad to see you. I'm thinking that only the man who brought Apocalypse How and The Future According to Me could somehow convince me to feature 2776. Tell folks what this is all about, Rob.
Well, this is a 1,000-year time-traveling journey through American history, past, present, and future. It's sort of an excuse for us to bring together a bunch of awesome comics and musicians who we love and have them take satirical pot shots at everything about America, history, politics, sex, sports, the media, and of course, zombie boy bands. All the stuff that we love to Levinson's and I, who have been old friends and comedy partners for a long time, love to talk about and play around with, we decided to put into song and get kind of unusual collaborations with people like Patton Oswalt and the guitarist for Muddy Waters and the guy who writes the Tweet of God Twitter account on one thing, and Nina Totenberg singing rock opera, you know, that old cliche.
And, yeah, that one.
And Triumph the Insult Comic Dog, you mentioned, with the Grammy Award-winning brass band, the Rebirth Brass Band. So it was about bringing together crazy people together, which is basically the mission statement of America, I think.
I'm sorry, did you say the Rebirth Brass Band, or I think Triumph said it was the Afterbirth Brass Band?
Yeah, that's right. That's what he called them, as he
yeah.
would. That will be a messier proposition, I think.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you, but I just couldn't let that slide.
No. How dare you interrupt this comedy spiel for a joke?
Oh, my God. I made a joke. Seems odd.
So, yeah, that was it. And then you know, it's a very sort of cynical and funny view of everything that's wrong with America. And spoiler alert, in the end, it does not convince the alien to save America, but Canada steps forward. And Trump has its many accomplishments, like discovering insulin and inventing the multiplex, and that turns the tide. But it's sort of a jaundiced view of where America has been and where it's going. But we also wanted to sort of couple it with a positive cause. So all the money from the album goes to One Kid, One World, which is this very small focused charity that builds schools and funds teacher salaries and buys textbooks and stuff for kids in a couple of rural villages in Kenya and El Salvador. So, you know, as much as we crap on the future and say it's hopeless, in fact, we counted about 5 apocalypses in our album that are describing different songs, we decided maybe we can also do something in the real world to prevent that.
It's funny, I was just thinking of a, I hate to say it, but a horrible movie that had somewhat similar premise, Americathon, with John Ritter and Meatloaf. Did you ever see that?
I don't know that, but I think I've just Netflixed it in my mind.
Oh, my God. It was terrible, and yet it was one of those things you just couldn't look away from it. Similarly, it had just a ton of cameos, and the idea was that America was going broke, and they had to do a telethon to raise money.
That sounds familiar, and it's a great idea, but I'm glad to hear that we're lumped in with that.
Sorry.
The great thing about an album is you can constantly look away from it.
That's true. And is anything in 2776 derivative of The Future According to Me? And
I don't think there's anything that is recycled from a previous thing. I think it's all sort of in the same vein of, like, just imagining, like, you know, as I said, there's, like, 5 apocalypses. There's, like, all kinds of, like, projections into things that could be or could go wrong. Like, I mentioned the Zombie Boy Band song. Like, we imagine a future where record executives are so risk-averse that they stop signing new artists and just reanimate dead successful artists. They're going to animate a zombie boy band. It's just the same kind of loopy ideas, but everything on the album is an original take on something.
So I'm guessing you might suggest that we'll know that The Walking Dead has jumped the shark when some of The Walking Dead start playing instruments and sing a song?
I think when they do, like, better choreography. They already have pretty good dance moves, I think, but when they start doing that spin, you know.
No. Okay. And so which came first, though? Was it the 2776, the musical itself, or was it the charity? And then how did things match up?
Well, the Levinsons and I had previously sort of thrown together an homage to Free to Be You and Me called It's Okay to Do Stuff, which is sort of a similar lower-key idea where we just got a couple of celebrities. We did some songs that were kind of modern updates of the Free to Be You and Me songs, and we did it for St. Jude's, which is, you know, Marla Thomas's charity. And what we realized in doing that is that if you're doing something for a charity, you can get all kinds of great people to get involved, and you don't have to worry about, like, their, you know, exorbitant fees, and you don't have to worry about making a profit on it, which is really hard with any record. And you can just do something that you love and just make it a place to play for everybody and everyone can feel good about. So that model was so effective that we thought, why not create something more ambitious and conceptual, get even more people, and make it, you know, sort of a more deliberate original thing. It's not, you know, sort of a spoof or an homage, and also use the model. So as soon as we started getting together, we shopped around for charities, and, you know, as you alluded to, there's some earthy language on it. So it's, you know, you're not going to necessarily get like a big thing like a Children's Defense Fund or UNESCO is not going to sign on because they have conservative donors. And, you know, it's a sort of it's hard to sort of get someone on board with a comedy album that uses the F word quite a bit. But One Kid, One World was actually started by people in the comedy business. A writer for The Cleveland Show and Happy Endings and a producer for Jimmy Kimmel and some other people. And so they get comedy and they put on their own comedy shows as fundraisers. And as soon as I approached them, they got it immediately and they said, yeah, do what you want, make people laugh, bring us some money, publicize the cause, we're all good. And it's been a great relationship ever since.
Well, I can see then that makes sense because when you start a charity with irreverent people, you know, anything is going to go from that point forward. So that makes sense.
Right.
And, I mean, from your perspective, why return to kind of the future motif? Haven't you done that enough already?
Well, the great thing about the future is that there's no accountability. Whatever you do. You'll never go back and prove you were wrong. If they did, then sucker, they bought your album, right? Or they bought your book. I think also, as I mentioned, this one also like delves into history a little bit. Like we have a remix of the Battle of the Alamo. We have the Civil War re-envisioned as a therapy session where Maria Bamford plays the North and the South, and Dr. Katz, Jonathan Katz, is the mediator. So, you know, we went back in time to look at that, and we looked at some present-day stuff. So it's not all like exploiting the future, which should be my motto, exploiting the future.
Got it. And did you didn't say this. I said this, that I made the reference to the bicentennial play, 1776. Is there no relation whatsoever? Did I make that up, or is there some line that can be drawn?
We like to think of it as 1776, but one better.
Okay.
1,000 times better. It's like the Spinal Tap logic.
All right.
No, I would say none of us are really like familiar with that. And, you know, that's kind of its own thing. And it's reverent, but also irreverent in a very different way. This is just sort of, this is kind of a catch-all so that we can sort of say anything we want really about America.
Right.
You can't really go beyond that. It encompasses everything.
Well, let's take a pause for a second and give folks a sample of 2776. This is Escape from New York, performed by Steven Levinson. He's on your left as you're watching this, and he is filling in for Ashanti and Joel Levinson. So take a look at this, folks.
The date, 2088, New York City's in a crazy state. It's a hopelessly dystopic, unlawful awfulness. The Big Apple's had a Big Apple apocalypse. It wasn't nukes, global warming, or terrorists. No one was prepared for this. Spreading like a plague, son. And there's no escape from the unstoppable gentrification. New York.
Escape from New York.
City just ain't what it used to be. Who needs subways that are shooter free? They have Wi-Fi for your computer free, and the bodega sell organic charcuterie. No more junkies with dice rollers. Now it's just babies named Aiden and Ava in nice rollers. That unconscious lady's not a mugging victim. She just got a little overheated doing Bikram. You thought getting mugged or raped was scary? Imagine the threat of being stung by the bees who produce the artisanal honey in my neighbor's rooftop apiary. The cops are hard as ever. They'll even vocally force you to only purchase farm-to-table locally sourced fruit, and the dealers aren't pushing MDMA. They push hearts with chard in your CSA, New York.
Escape from New York.
Central New York, where's the crime scares in Times Square? Motherfuckers dropping dimes there. Used to be filled with human slime and grime. Now it's a reclaimed urban park space, and don't get me started on the High Line stairs.
Escape from New York.
CBGB's reopened this year. Now it stands for craft root growlers of beer. No one gets shot and left for deceased, but corn gets popped and topped with nutritional yeast. You can still find soul food, but it's $8.99 a pound from the hot bar at Whole Foods.
Down on Wednesday.
Criminals are brutally hard, and their apes steal and bite from community gardens. I remember when life wasn't great here, when innocent people met horrible fate here. Now it's so harmless, even the Finnish immigrate here.
If you don't like shade-grown coffee, you're in the wrong fucking city.
New York! Escape from New York!
All right. Excellent. Thank you, guys. Rob, what can you tell us about where Escape from New York fits into the 2776 narrative?
Well, what we have is sort of a very sort of subtle, like we don't spell it out, but the show starts off with the Will Forte singing this kind of State of the Union in the year 2776 called America We're Good, about how great everything is and how America can just kind of give up and just mail it in from now on. And then right to the alien lands and threats to destroy the Earth, and Will says you can't because the Earth contains America. And that would also be a tragedy. And so he and Aubrey get into their time machine and take the alien and say, look at all the wonders of America. So at that point, they kind of start in the near future, I would say, and go backwards in time. And this is kind of a sort of a this is sort of a futuristic dystopian rap about, you know, about New York, but it's kind of based on current trends. So it's very contemporary, but it has sort of a futuristic vibe. And that's actually the first song in the album that's after the plot starts. And then it goes back in time, and then they break the time machine, and they have some trouble, and then they come back into the future and end up where they started. So it's kind of the beginning of the journey.
So it's kind of Will and Aubrey's Excellent Adventure?
Yeah, exactly. Just less Napoleonic.
Okay. I'm thinking, you know, whenever someone pulls together as diverse a cast, and cameos, of course, as you guys did with 2776, especially for a charity event, whether it's a Live Aid or Comic Relief or any of those types of things, the logistics, I assume, to be immensely daunting. Lots of favors called in, schedule rearranging, begging, that kind of thing. Or am I overstating the case?
Oh yeah, I would describe the logistics of this project as marriage threatening. There's just a lot of, there's a lot of email, there's a lot of last-minute calls, there's a lot of texting, there is a lot of paper calling, and we worked with a bunch of studios that gave us good discounts or let us come in for free or were super cool about it. That was important. We did a lot of stuff where we just went on Facebook and says, this Canada song, we just sent a blanket email to a bunch of managers of Canadian acts, and Katie Lang's person wrote back, and she's like, Katie's in to do it, but she's in Portland, and she can only do it tomorrow. So I'm on Facebook saying, who knows a studio in Portland that is cool? And somebody. I got a bunch of responses. We hooked her up and we recorded her. And if you've heard the song, she kind of sells the whole thing, in a way, music. She really ties it all together. So it's that kind of thing is just amazing. But it's you have to have all these resources, and the kindness of strangers, I would say, was very much an important part of it.
Any other good examples from the production of people coming
in? As you're sort of insinuating, when you do something for free or for cheap, you're not going to get people showing up at your house right away saying, when you need me, you get people when they're available.
Right.
And it's just amazing that people were just super cool. We had this sketch in there with a couple of comedy legends like Dick Cavett and Dick Gregory and Al Jaffe, and that involved this whole marathon session where I flew into New York for 36 hours, got the studio Pulse in New York, which has been very cool with us, to give us some time, and we had to rent a limo to basically go around New York and pick all these guys up, and we got a deli platter, and we almost couldn't get to Joe Franklin because the traffic was horrible that day, and it's just everything feels like a really, really silly episode of 24, just if it's not going to, if one thing falls through, it's not going to get done, and all of comedy will be destroyed as we know it.
But you had a deli platter.
Right, exactly. At least we got corned beef. So.
Yeah. And did casting at all have anything to do with who might be appearing on Conan on a given day?
It actually didn't, because you would think that I would just walk up to people with my sign-up sheet, but that you have to sort of maintain a respectful distance because celebrities aren't coming into my show to go do free charity projects. The one exception I would say is that recording Will Arnett, basically he's a super busy guy, as you know. So what we arranged with there was he was coming on the show and I couldn't even use our recording booth because they were busy. I had to go with our sound engineer who mixed a couple of the songs and has been super cool. I had to basically kidnap Will the moment he was done with his segment, drag him around the stage while the show is being taped into where the band rehearses, the Basic Cable Band rehearses, and record 5 minutes of him for, those funny lines he does in the Canada song, and then bring him back to the green room to hang out with his agent and stuff. So it's that's, if you can imagine, the cloak and dagger, that kind of thing. That was pretty exciting. For the most part, though, it was people that that either I knew or had some connection to, or a friend would pass along an email. And, you know, either someone wants to do this or they don't. That was the sort of what we learned in the end. Like, they either get back to you right away and say, let's do it, or you send a bunch of emails and never get responded. So that was pretty simple. If someone was into it, that was our person.
Now, the Katie Lang story is a great one. And I'm wondering, too, if there were any people who agreed to do it who just kind of came out of thin air. Maybe they were a friend of a friend, or, you know, people. I mean, you've been around show business a long time, so I assume that you've encountered a lot of people. But were there people in that list of 80 that you didn't know that came along with somebody else, or that, you know, just through the goodness of their heart, or, you know, they just wanted to do something fun?
I think, you know, it's hard to say, because I think like it's one thing to, like, to agree to do something, but then to make your friend do it too. It's like, it wasn't so much of that, but I would say is that it did sort of bring me into contact with a lot of awesome people that I never would have worked with. Like, you know, like Aubrey Plaza, like I just knew a writer on Parks and Rec who I was friends with, and I just passed his email along to those, and, like, you know, 9/10 of those just get ignored or not responded to, but she wrote back right away and said, this sounds great. And so, like, all of a sudden I'm getting to, like, work with her on something. And you know, maybe our paths would have crossed one day, but it was just nice to have that opportunity that it created for me, just, you know, just to do something cool together that we can always say we did.
Nice. I'm sorry, Rob. Excuse me. I'm getting a call. Hold on a second. Hello? Oh, yeah, I'll tell him. Okay. Sorry. Yeah, I don't know how he tapped into the feed, but Conan says he doesn't want you to refer to the Conan show as my show again.
Well played, Bob. Well played.
I just passed the messages on, folks.
Let me get the message that I got and fired.
Yeah, that may be the next call. All right, let's take a look at a second song from 2776. This is I Want to Take a Nap. And it's, well, you'll see in a minute. This is again performed by the Levinson brothers, Joel and Steven.
2, 3, 4. I don't care what the sleep police say. I'm not drinking your Red Bull, no way. Going down to a club I know. Owner's a junkie, so it's usually closed. They say it's illegal, but I don't give a crap. Gonna stick it to the man. Take a nap.
Yeah.
Take a fucking nap.
Yeah.
My mom says I should go to work. My teachers say I'm a sleepy jerk. My dad says I'm not even his. I say they should keep it down, cause I'm trying to take a nap.
Yeah. Take a fucking nap. Yeah.
Jump solo. Screw your wars, screw your dramas. I just want a nap in my footy pajamas. If you're here to wake me, you're shit out of luck. I'm in bed for one reason,
and it ain't the fuck.
If the cops play jazz, fucking entrapment. But I'll take the rap, I'm giving it in nap. They say stay awake, you pussies do that. If you need me, I'll be dreaming. I'm taking a nap, but fuck you all, I'm going sleepy time.
So that was I Want to Take a Nap, performed by Joel and Steven Levinson from 2776. Anything you can tell us about this song?
Yeah, so that's one of the visions of the future we have. That's one of the milder visions of the future we have, is that it's a dystopic future, but, you know, instead of Brave New World or 1984, where speech and thought are controlled, it's just basically outlawed to take a nap. And so, you know, it's a punk anthem about finding the man by getting some shut-eye. And I would say from a biographical level, that probably comes from the fact that Joel and Steven and I are all the parents of little kids. So a deep yearning of the soul, let's say.
My kid's 2 weeks from today going off to college, but I can still appreciate how important getting that kid to nap periodically was.
Just yourself getting a nap.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Yeah, if she would nap, then I could take a nap.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I get that completely. You know, we've talked, and we're going to talk in a minute about your work outside of 2776. But tell folks a little bit about Joel and Steven. Who are they, and you know, what do they do, and, you know, who did what in terms of, you know, the background on 2776?
So Joel and Steven and I have been sort of comedy friends, you know, which are the most special friends of all, for, you know, probably 20 years. We both edited our college humor magazines, and a mutual friend introduced us. And then when I moved to New York for The Daily Show, I started putting on a sketch show with Steven. And then Steven introduces me to his brother, Joel, who's this amazing songwriter, comedy songwriter. He's won tens of thousands of dollars in these contests where you make a jingle for a company. And because he's amazing, like, he writes an amazingly catchy tune, and he's great with the camera, and he looks so goofy on film that you can't resist him. And So three of us became this sort of dynamic trio. Can you say that? Sure.
Just put a little TM next to it when you do it.
Yeah, exactly. Dynamic trio. Titanic. There you go. Titanic trio. So the three of us became this unit where basically, like, we would all pitch ideas around. Sometimes it would be Joel would just sort of have a musical idea and noodle around with that, or he'd say, let's do this thing in this genre. What do you think of this idea? And then we'd completely rip it to shreds and do something different. Or sometimes it would just emerge full-blown from Joel's head. He's a great lyricist as well. Or sometimes we would have an idea and try to nail it. Like, we kept wanting something about, like, the idea of, like, you know, Hispanics and the majority issue and the changing face of America. You're in Florida, so you can appreciate how important that is. And we were trying to find a historical link to that, and we had all these different ideas about Columbus and stuff like that. So we really tried a lot of different incarnations before we finally hit on the idea of the Alamo song. So that was one example of how it worked. Another example would be how we just wanted to do something with Amy Mann, and she was one of the first people who signed on to the project because she's, like, a really cool comedy person who wants to do that kind of stuff. And so what happened was Stephen had this amazing idea for she does great breakup songs, so what if it's a futuristic vision of the common cold after we've cured it and it misses us? Sad about breaking us up. This is a crazy Amy, but it's also a logical Amy Mann idea. And so then we sat down to write the lyrics, and then Joel sort of, like, emulated her style without, you know, not so much parroting, but, like, fitting into her style. And then we sent it to her, and she was like, I dig this. This is right in my groove. And so that was one of the more felicitous ones. So it really was a wide range of different ways to do it, because, like, when you have, like, such a grab bag of different songs, and, you know, Joel probably, I would say maybe 15 or 20 more songs that didn't make it in, or pieces of songs. And it was just Darwinian in the end, like, the ones that we all love, we had to all love them. They had to all have a reason to be in or have something original or special about them, and that's what made it in.
Do they ever form a voting block to override you?
But that's the greatest thing about three people, is that there's all kinds of voting blocks. There's always two. And it wasn't just them. A lot of times it would be me and Stephen versus Joel, or me and Joel versus Stephen. And you'd be surprised, because, you know, they are brothers. You'd be surprised. It was probably very rarely the Levinson brothers uniting on something. Tell them to listen. Stop hitting me.
All right. So for the last section of the show, I want to change topics and talk to you a little bit about your day gig. I was kind of thinking about it, that after the uncertainty of the Tonight Show that Conan O'Brien, for people who've gotten this far and don't know who we're talking about, has settled into this really nice run on TBS and recently scored a multi-year extension. And I'm wondering, what, if anything, is the difference between the show you guys attempted to do at NBC for that short period and the one you now produce for TBS?
It's a great question, and it's a big difference. I think basically we were sort of trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, or maybe a tall peg into a short hole. I think you know, the Tonight Show is, like, it was this institution, and it has this mandate of, like, reaching out to the largest group of people possibly demographically, and that is hard to do. And you know Carson was able to do that, and Lena was able to do that, and it's by sort of, like, doing a very broad ranging thing. And I think, you know, Conan's genius is not his broad-ranging thing, but his very specific voice. And so Conan has his integrity, and he said, I'm going to do what I do, and I'll add some more things in and some more guests that will bring in more people, but I'm not going to change what I think is funny. I'm not going to change what I think is interesting. I'm going to try to sell that to everybody else. And he just really wasn't the right fit. And also, like, NBC gets nervous about the numbers, and they're saying, like, you know, this isn't reaching, like, moms who were age 34, you know, who buy, you know, who buy amusement park tickets. That's who we're selling ads to this week. And, you know, Conan's not the kind of guy who's going to, like, go right after that target or something like that. He's going to say, this is what I do best. This is what you hired me for. And, you know, so we did our best job with that, but it was like sort of an awkward, you know, blind date kind of thing. And in the end, it didn't work out. And TBS came along and said, we love what you do, and we just want to put you on the air and give you the resources you need to do it. And, you know, for basic cable, they threw all kinds of resources at us that had never been attempted in late nights. But those shows are kind of down on the cheap and quick. And they said, you can do a real legit show. We're going to make it happen, and we're going to get out of your way and let you do it. And they've done that. And so Conan got to sort of blossom. And in a way, it was kind of healthy, because we sort of jettisoned a lot of stuff that we've been doing on late night and Tonight Show, and just, like, had to reinvent the show anew. And that was really cool. we had like this established group of writers and crew and talent who were all like really polished and could just hit their marks professionally and do everything really well, but all new ideas. So that's kind of a really cool combination. So I think we've been really happy to just like be on our own vessel, just doing our thing, and you know, just enjoying it. It's a lot of fun.
Well, you know, much as I like Jimmy Fallon, and I really do, and I liked him doing Late Show, you know, following after Conan, I don't really think that what he does is that much different on The Tonight Show than from what you guys attempted, but with Conan. But to me, the difference over time has been timing, frankly, that NBC, maybe even more than the audience, wasn't ready for this cultural break with the traditional Tonight Show that happened when Conan took over from Leno. And then by the time Leno had it back, my feeling was, as just a viewer, that somebody realized how tired that old format had been. But now Conan was out the door, and you guys gave them a taste of what it could be. They weren't ready for it. They brought Leno back, which was horrible, sorry, but I mean, I think it was horrible, but it was back to what they felt comfortable with. And then they wound up going in Conan's direction after all with Fallon. That's my own, strictly my own opinion.
Definitely, that's a good analysis, and I think definitely that's true on the youth angle, because I think what happened was they were probably honestly surprised, you know, as we were, pleasantly, to see like the outpouring people who were just like angry. I think I feel like the Conan Leno thing was in some way kind of a baby boomer versus next generation sort of fight, where like, you know, the guy, you know, who won't give up his job so the new guy can take over, and there's this sort of youth audience who's very like plugged in, engaged in social media and very outspoken. They saw like how unpopular that was making, and that was the whole point. NBC had wanted to bring Conan in to get those youth involved. You know, Leno was pretty successful. Like, why would you mess with that? Because they wanted to get the next generation. And when they saw how unhappy they were with the Conan Leno thing, they said, you know what, you're right, we got to tack back in that direction after all.
All right, so changing the topic just slightly, can you tell us what a typical day writing for Conan involves? I mean, you're there, whatever, 8, 10, probably in your family's view, 16 hours a day. What does your day involve? Where does it start and where does it finish?
It starts in confusion and ends in despair.
I'm sad for you.
To be more concrete, basically we get in about 9 or 10. Now there's two teams, the monologue team and the sketch team, and I'm on the monologue team. Sometimes we pitch ideas that are more like videos or sketches or live pieces, and then we work with a sketch person to produce it, or they take it from us and take over. But mostly the monologue team is kind of like producing stuff on a factory line. We come in at 9 or 10. We turn in stuff early in the day. We turn in a batch of jokes. We call them batches, you know, like we're making cookies. And then we meet, put those into shape, and send them to Conan. He comes back with his reactions to those, which ones he picks, which ones he's like, you know, good area. Not sure if that's the right way, but I like the story. I want to do something on it. We take another stab at it, and then we go take those to Conan and meet with them, talk it through a little bit. So we're sort of down to the semifinal round at that point. And then we go back and write another batch. And then we meet with them one more time, and this is...
Rob?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. It says the network connection is experiencing difficulties. I lost you right after you took the jokes to Conan for his response, and now you're back. So let me jump in and try to explain what happened there, and we can pick it up from there. So, folks, you may have noticed that we lost contact with Rob briefly, and he was just in the middle of his day. What actually happened is Conan came in and threatened his life if he gave away any more secrets, but I'm going to try again anyway. So you get into the point where you have the final review of Conan going over the monologue jokes, and then do you find that, you know, some people on a given day, some people's jokes, more of them get in than someone else's, or is it pretty evenly rounded out? Or
I think we don't know. It's pretty anonymous, unless there's some reason we need to know, which is good. I think that's better. So I think I would like to think it averages out, because I feel like I have days in which, you know, I'll get a bunch of jokes like all in a row, or just all kinds of mine get picked, and then a day when like I'm just a dry spell. And that averages out so much that I feel like I sort of keep a loose count of my weekly averages, and they're almost always the same. So I feel like it's just like, you know, you have a good day, you have a bad day. And that's the great thing about a daily show, is that you know, you have a bad day, you come back in and get back on the horse the next day.
Do you ever wake up in the morning and go, God damn it, I'm just not going to be funny today. Nothing makes me laugh. Nothing entertains me, and I can't entertain anyone else.
I think it would be more accurate to say, do I have any day where that does not happen?
Oh.
you know, there's always the blank page. That's you know, every writer faces that, and every day it's like you got to sort of like, I find sometimes just putting a crappy joke that's the top of my mind down. Sort of once you get down, you've broken through the barrier, and then you can kind of move on with the day. But, you know, I just never, sometimes it comes naturally. Sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes it comes naturally to me, and Conan thinks they're all crap. And sometimes I think the jokes are crap, and he takes a bunch of them. So, like, it's just, there's no way to know, and it's very fluid, which is, you know, good and bad. Good for my therapist.
Well, you got to keep him or her in business, too. You're supporting a lot of family there. You frequently post jokes during the course of the day and the evening to your Facebook account, and I wondered, are these Conan rejects, or is the show just not big enough to contain all of your one-liners and gags in a day? Where does that stuff come from on top of the show you've already written?
A couple of them are ones where I really like them. Conan didn't like them, or just like they didn't work for some reason. Like he didn't choose them, and I'm like, you know what? He was right. That wouldn't have worked. Or we had another one that was just, we had a different take on that story that was a better joke, but I still liked mine. And, you know, no accountability. That's my mantra. I think that's only a fraction of them. I would say most of the jokes I tweet at Apocalypse Hell, by the way, most of those jokes are things that just I wouldn't even submit because they would be too pointed or sort of obscure or kind of written in sort of a more conversational style or just like riffing off of something as opposed to a full-fledged, this happened today, here's the joke. You know, that format is very specific to the show and it doesn't always work on Twitter. So sometimes you think it's something funny, it just works better in that format. And sometimes they're just, you know, observational stuff, which we don't really do that much of, the sort of Seinfeldian.
Well, the final thing I want to ask you, and you've been great with your time today, you've always got something going on, from my perspective, beyond your day job. So 2776 is out now, it's wrapped. Obviously, you're promoting it, but, you know, are you already working on something, the next thing? Is there something else coming up now?
Well, my wife has already informed me, no more charity albums. beyond that, you know, I'm doing the usual things. I'm you know, pitching some ideas for half-hour shows and working on a comic book, which I hope to come back and talk to you about soon.
Cool.
And I am, the 2776 stuff is still going on. Like we're writing some more videos right now and we're creating some more original stuff to kind of put that out there as well. You know, when I have something, you'll be the first to know, or at least the ninth.
Well, somewhere between first and ninth would be fine.
Yeah, it is a good
point. All right. Well, folks, listen, you can order the 28-song futuristic musical 2776, written by my guest, Rob Kuttner, and the Levinson brothers, Joel and Stephen, on CD or as a digital download right now at a great price from MrMedia.com. If you watch the show a lot, and I know you do, you know that if you're on MrMedia.com, just below this video, you'll see a copy of the cover of 2776. You can order it. Yep. Now stop pointing to your crotch. That's impolite.
That's for sale, too.
Yeah, that's for sale, too. You can. We'll have your wife on tomorrow to discuss that. Click on it now. If you order the CD, I'm sure that Amazon can get it to you via drone in 30 minutes or less. Otherwise, you can have it shipped to you in a day or two, or even faster, you can listen right now, get the digital download. That is very, very
every useful. Goes to support One Kid, One World, just so you know.
All the money goes to One Kid, One World, a very irreverent foundation, apparently. And the website is www.2776.us, I believe, right?
Mm. All right. Yeah.
And does 2776, does it have a Facebook or Twitter or any other social media presence?
At Facebook, if you go to 2776 album or just even type in 2776, we have, it actually has completely different content from the website. It has all kinds of studio sessions and behind the scenes and a lot of original artwork that was commissioned for the album by some really cool people like Roz Chast and Linda Berry. You can check that out there and also get updates on what we're doing. So, and 2776 updates on Twitter. We do constant updates about media coverage and events and stuff we're doing as well.
Cool. And I'll also point out that the Levinson brothers have a YouTube channel, and there are videos for from this and a Pinocchio project and some other things. So, and they are Levinson Brothers on, that's their channel on YouTube. So check them out. Rob Kuttner, as well as Joel Levinson and Stephen Levinson, who were on with us earlier. Thanks so much for joining us on Mr. Media today, and good luck with this.
Thanks for having me. Talk to you a fourth time.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk, and they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
And what you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
Oh, yeah. Hey, these are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot. Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show. Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network, and catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights.
The preceding presentation was brought to you by the Realm Network.
Once in a while.
I was just uploading the show to VTR. I didn't get to do that Friday before we left.
It should be over.
Oh, I'm in the show.